Hi, Dagmar. Hi, Julia. Good to see you. Hi, Mary Ellen. Hi, Kim. Hi, Sharon. Hi, Linda. I'm glad you're able to make it live today, Linda. I know that's not always possible. I'll put my phone away.
Me too, Joanna. Thank you. Good to be here.
Oh, Rose is here. Hi, Rose. I'm glad you were able to make it. Hi, Sonia. Hi, Dottie. All right, we'll wait another moment. Hey, Natalie. Hi, Bruce. Who else can I say hi to? Hi, Naomi. Hi, Anika. All right. It's so nice to see everybody. I got to see some of you yesterday. So, yay, twice in 1 week for some of us. I am so excited to be here with all of you. As I was sharing yesterday, for those of you that weren't there, just saying that I had a really, aside from the heaviness in the world and a lot of grief around that, I had a really nice time off. It was really good. I actually unplugged fully for a full week, no nothing, which was excellent. And also, I have to admit, and I know this sounds corny, but it's just the truth. I missed you all, really. Like, I was happy to unplug, but I also really missed being in this space with all of you and connecting with you and sharing with you. So I'm so excited to be back and to be with all of you. We are going to go into myth of perfection today, and I have a lot to share. There's a lot of content for today's call. But to get us started, let's just do a little exercise to kind of ease back into things. I'll give you about 2 minutes, and I want to invite you to journal on the following prompt, which is simply, today I feel, today I feel, and just see what words want to come through from there. You can check in with your heart before you start writing or just go. I'll give you about 2 minutes. Today I feel. So we're just starting with the writing prompt, today I feel. Take another minute, see what else wants to come through. Give yourself the space to locate yourself. And then you can start to bring that writing to a close for now and just read it over. As you read it over with your practitioner hat on, with your deep listening skills. So read it over to take it in, to integrate what needs to be integrated, and also with your deep listening skills. And then from there, take a moment and craft a journaling question for yourself or homework based on your writing. So practice your question crafting skills. It would be a great journaling question for you for later. And if anyone wants to share their question in the chat, if you like the question you've come up with, it's great to see examples of really powerful questions. What would make you feel more complete with your plan? Nice, Julia. How can I honor this cycle of completion? Beautiful. What's behind busyness? Yep. What's one way I could take this positive feeling and expand it into my marketing? Beautiful. How can I anchor this feeling into my body or in my body? Where does the anxiety stem from? Beautiful, good. So hopefully you all have you've done a little practice in listening and questioning, and you've got a little homework assignment for yourself. Okay. So we're gonna continue today on our kind of our overarching module on obstacles. We've looked at resistance. We've looked deeper into energetics. We've looked at befriend your fear. We've looked at thought patterns, all different ways of looking at obstacles. And today we're gonna kind of deepen with all of that and go further by looking at perfectionism and the myth of perfection. So we all probably know this, but just to say, what is perfectionism? There's lots of different ways we can define this, but I'll just define it briefly right now by saying perfectionism can show up as the need to get it totally right all the time. Perfectionism can show up as not really feeling happy or settled or satisfied unless it, whatever it is absolutely perfect or near perfect. Perfectionism can show up as being in fight or flight if it's not totally as you expected. So kind of those survival instincts can kick in, that magical thinking can safeguard you. Magical thinking around perfectionism can safeguard you from disaster, right? If only it was perfect, then perfectionism can show up as judging yourself or judging others really harshly when it's not perfect or near perfect. And while there is a case to be made that perfectionism can sometimes be helpful, I know that my perfectionism is sometimes helpful when it's in check, when I've checked my filters, when I'm kind of in a healthy relationship with it, it can be motivating, et cetera. Much of the time our perfectionism is unchecked. We're not in good relationship with it. And then it can become an obstacle. And there's lots of different ways that perfectionism can become an obstacle. One of my classic personal stories is my very first website that I put together. It took over a year to get that website out because I kept on going back to every little detail and everything had to be just right. And it worked against me. Much better to have that imperfect website out there doing its job for me than every single word being right. So perfectionism is an obstacle when it stops you from actually getting things done, or, you know, it can make things take much longer. We can get caught up or even obsessed in fixing unnecessary details instead of moving things forward. Sometimes extreme perfectionism can cause us to not show up at all, to just take ourselves out of the game completely. Sometimes we can have a reaction to extreme perfectionism where we show up as the sloth, right? Or we end up making more mistakes than usual. Perfectionism can rob us of our confidence. And of course, just the energy that gets caught up in all of that self-judgment, all of those thoughts. What I have found is that there are some people that are perfectionists in every area of their life. And then there are other people that perfectionism may only come up in certain areas or in relationship to certain people, right? But it has the potential to show up anywhere from your work to your client work, to your creativity or your creative work, to your parenting, to how you approach your friendships, to your home, to your appearance, your sex life. Perhaps it's shown up in how you think you should show up for this program and this training, and can show up in so many ways. So let's look a little bit deeper there for a few minutes. On a scale of 1 to 10, how perfectionist are you? Or how much does perfectionism show up in your life? And for anyone that's seeing themselves on the higher end of, I'll just share with you, this is one of my Achilles heels. Like I'm definitely a 9 or a 10 on this one. Elijah, did you have a question? Did you have a question, Elijah?
Sorry, no, sorry about that. Sorry.
Okay. That's okay. Next question. What are some of the places that perfectionism shows up for you? Yeah, work, body, team, content creation, business, home, relationships, hosting events. When I know I'm being evaluated, body, creativity, production. All right, next thing to think about, for those places that you identified, what's positive about the perfectionism? How is it, maybe the better way of saying it is, how is your perfectionism helpful? And then in what ways is your perfectionism not helpful? For those areas that you identified, in what ways is the perfectionism helpful? In what ways is it not so helpful? And Julie is saying not really helpful, and that might be the case. Yeah, some not really helpful at all. Some striving for excellence, holding to a high standard. Yeah, but then it can devolve from there. Okay, let's take this a little bit further. I'm going to give you a journaling prompt. And even if you don't believe the prompt, go with it. See what wants to come from it. The first one is, being perfect will save me from. Being perfect will save me from. I'll give you about a minute to just rewrite from there. Put it in the chat too. Being perfect will save me from. And just keep on going. Give yourself some space with this one. Just see all that wants to come through. Yeah, take another few moments. Some really poignant pieces in the chat will save you from criticism. Being perfect will save me from having the right to live, from being ridiculed, laughed at, rejected. I'm feeling unworthy of what I have. Forgetting myself will save me from being educated, will save me from shame, from judgment. So in this way, we can hopefully see how perfectionism, it is a survival strategy in a way, not necessarily one that we want to be using, but why it can be such a potent go-to place. And I want to hear some shares, but I want to give you one more writing prompt, and then I want to hear some more of what you're seeing. So Here's another writing prompt. My parents, or if you don't want to use your parents, you can insert someone else. My parents expected me to be perfect by. My parents expected me to be perfect by. You can insert a teacher, grandparent, culture, whatever works for you. It'll take about a minute on that one. All right, so let's pause here. What are you seeing so far? What feels important? What are you noticing? I'd love to hear one or two voices. Elijah.
Thank you. So the biggest, most interesting thing about perfectionism for me, as you started this dialogue this morning, for me it's morning, is that I never thought of myself as a perfectionist. I always thought the gut-wrenching fear of showing up that stopped me from like writing my newsletter or doing whatever was like fear of showing my true self, mm-hmm. like something else like that. And I'm like, I mean, maybe that's part of it, right? And there's some stuff in my childhood that kind of leads to that. But I really get that perfectionism is alive within me. So that was a huge discovery because it feels like more empowering to understand what's going on with me. So mm-hmm. thank you. Yeah.
You're so welcome. I can see that empowerment just in your face. And if it's helpful, it might be worthwhile to also explore the link between those two things, those two things, right? How they relate to and impact.
Yeah. As soon as you said that, I already started getting some downloads. Yeah. Very cool. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Dagmar.
Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. I hope this is appropriate for sort of like the context of this class, but I'm literally just seeing this huge relationship between, I got pregnant first time when I was 18, and my partner at that time was a man of brown skin, and my father actually like really violated my identity and called me all sort of slutty names just because my partner was of different ethnicity. And he not only took the hatred on like his son-in-law, on myself, but also on our child. And that led to a lot of just horrendous, horrendous complications over the next couple of months. And what I'm seeing is with my work, where so much of my drive is help women liberate pain or dysfunction in their reproductive system, actually comes from like this huge wounding, but also deep drive of like every woman has right to be healthy in her reproductive system and have choice around fertility or choice around who she chooses to have a baby with. And it actually really comes from this. So I haven't created that connection before. And today it just like opened my eyes. So I'm very, very grateful for that.
I'm so glad that that connection came through. It feels important to see that, and excited to see how that connection will evolve, you know, like strengthen your work even more. Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
And who else? Can we have time for one more share? There's some great shares. It looks like in the chat, Vesica, you're seeing that you're the only one who expected yourself to be perfect. That's important to look at. Sonia's saying, I forgot the middle way here too. We're going to look at that because that's related for sure. Yes. Julia.
Hi. What's coming up for me is I can see that there were some unreasonable expectations that were placed on me as a firstborn child by my parents and grandparents and everyone else. I was the only girl for the longest time. Everyone else had boys and they were all smart and intelligent. And there was this expectation that I should put aside my femininity so that I could be more like them. However, I was also expected to be the perfect feminine person in the house. And I see that's where my dual personalities collide in business and at home, those different types of energies. And it is the good girl versus the rebel. The rebel's like, forget you. And the good girl's like, no, this is the right way. This is the path. Let's keep on it. This is how we stay good and safe. And the rebel's like, no, this is how we disappear. So it's an interesting point.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you're talking, and you know, this might be for homework if it feels like it would be useful, I would be interested to see what happens when your good girl and your rebel connect with each other and hold space for each other and dialogue with each other. And what might come out of that dialogue.
I like that. I'll set up a meeting.
Good. Let us know how. Take notes. Let us know how it goes. Kim.
As I was reflecting on what my parents expected of me, I realized how much I adopted that. It wasn't just their expectation, but I learned to expect it of myself. And have continued forward of adding more and more things that I expect of myself in the way of perfectionism. And I think for me, I never used to think of myself as a perfectionist because there are so many things that I feel like I'm not super organized. Those kinds of things that I think of as more like a one on the Enneagram or something doesn't really apply to me, but there's so many things that do. And I think I easily am so tied to comparison and sort of just looking at what others expect that I don't really know what my own sense of it is. I'm just adopting it from others. And I started early doing that.
I'm so glad that that's coming through. I mean, that right there, Kim, has the potential, that awareness has the potential to be revolutionary for you.
How does it become revolutionary? Because it's not new awareness exactly. I mean, and so what do I do with it to be, allow it?
Yeah. So, for each of these questions, I always wish we had like a half hour to go into a coaching session. So I'm giving homework to do your own, you know, for each of you to do your own coaching session. How does this feel? My sense is to make a list. Like, I think you've probably made the list in your head, but to actually write down what all of those expectations and expectations of perfection have been on you, right? So that's the first step. Like, let's just see them in black and white so that they don't hang out in the blind spots or like get taken as truth internally, right? Like really see them for what they are. And then step two from there is, okay, those were the expectations. And, you know, we can put in parentheses of perfection. what are my expectations of myself from my highest self, from my wise self, from my self-loving, my self-compassionate self? Now, and then it's not going to be total magic, right? And then like, you're going to be in column two and that's the end. But it's tell me if you agree. I think it's a first step to start to unpack it more and get that on that mental level of learning and processing, really actually know what you're going for, where you want to align, so that when you fall back into the other places, you can move yourself to what's aligned. And then we're going to be looking at a lot of different tools today as well that you can add to that. But how does that feel as kind of next step?
I think one thing maybe to extend that second one is not to just do that once, but then to come back and say, is this really what I expect of myself? Because I can, it's really hard to disentangle myself from what the others are. And so I'm not sure I know. And I think maybe over time and playing with it, I can know better.
Yes, I love that. I can feel that is bringing, there's something very true in that for you. Something that also might help with that is think of someone who you love dearly, who you would not project perfectionistic expectations onto them. As you set the expectations for yourself, almost like pretend like it's that person, right?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anika.
Hi. I come from a family of teachers, my parents, my grandmother, my aunt. And ever since I knew myself, there was that pressure to be the perfect person, to be perfect in class, to be perfect outside of class. And in addition with being the firstborn as well, having to be the one to set the example. And I was just realizing on top of that, because I come from an island where everyone doesn't know everyone, but there's always someone who knows someone who knows someone. So there was always that pressure of everyone's always looking at what you do and it being reported back. And so I think all of that compounded that perfectionism aspect and what Julia was talking about with between the rebel and the good girl, that really clicked for me, because I realized as soon as I discovered my sexuality, my personality split. There was the one for the public and then the me for the private. And I've been battling with that all my life. And it's only been this past five years where I'm letting my friends know all the aspects of me, and especially this past couple of years. And I feel that's where that huge fear of being seen comes from, having been so traumatized by that, because I look like my mom and I look like my dad, so I can never hide, ever.
Right. You have to be perfect, not only for yourself, but for them and the family and the lineage and the, right? And you can feel then that mounting pressure from all of that. I want to really acknowledge you, Anika, for starting to share all of yourself with your friends or these other aspects. That to me, my sense is that's a piece in the evolving with all of this.
It was so bad. I had different clothes for everything, depending on where I was going, who I was with. I was a different person. Even with my ex-husband, I was a different person. And I was completely split. I felt like I was schizophrenic, actually. I thought I was schizophrenic. So I have been making progress, but it's like this piece that needs to shift.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it makes sense that you're picked up on what Julia and I were talking about. I would say you have different parts of yourself, like we all do. We all have a multiplicity of parts. And you have the good girl part or the rebel or whatever you want to name them. And I'd also love for you to do that homework assignment of starting to see, have them dialogue together and see what they want to say to each other. And you can intervene in that dialogue too, like from your highest self, you know, so good girl, you know, what could you be doing differently to have more compassion for the rebel or, you know, whatever it is, but you can be part of that conversation too. Does that feel like a useful homework assignment?
Oh yes, I wrote it down. When I heard it, I was like, ooh.
Good. Yeah, thank you. Bruce.
I noticed you helped me become more aware. I noticed when the more tasks I have to do, the busier I get, the more perfectionism slips in. And mm-hmm. So I can kind of create order and meaning. I have to get this task completely done. I have to get this task completely done so I can let go of it. And so I try and order my world through perfectionism, the busier I get, which of course, you know, ups the ante on everything and makes it all mostly impossible. So there's that weird mind twist. And the other thing I thought of while you were talking is that my son has done a good job of educating me around perfectionism. He's a fine art jeweler. And my wife and I noticed, we went to see him last month, and outside on his front porch, there's a cooler from a camping trip we know he went on. And I went over there yesterday and that cooler is still there, and I kicked it and it was really heavy, and I opened it up and it's full of bacon and eggs and 6 packs of beer, and it has a green coating on the top floating in the water inside of it. And so he has, you could lick the counter where he builds his jewelry. I mean, it is so perfect. It's unbelievable. And yet there's that other side to him, and it makes me more accepting of the unordered parts of myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. Yes, I resonate with both parts, both pieces that you're sharing. And this what you're sharing about your son, we'll get there today too. This like, and we can have the sloth, or we can have the absolute, you know, messy one, or right, whatever it is. Those are essential parts also.
Yep. Okay, so thank you.
And then one last share for now, Rose.
Thank you for this conversation. I didn't. So these last few shares have really all of a sudden just dropped in that about the the other selves of ourselves. And I realized that my perfectionism covered up my secret self. And I've done a huge amount of work on, you know, unpacking my childhood, with, you know, which had just huge shame and secret lives and incest. And I mean, it was my perfectionism saved me from that, but didn't really serve me in the long run. And so just bringing all this forward, forgiving, kind of even exposing my secret self. I've done a lot of work, even, you know, I go through rounds of it. This has been a big round this last year of digging out this secret part of me and just normalizing her, bringing, integrating the bad girl into me, because, you know, bad girls are fun. And, you know, good girls, it's just a huge effort to be a good girl all the time. And so anyway, this is just a wonderful, it's just every, I feel like it's all kind of blending and integrating. And perfectionism, I don't know if it'll ever go away, but it is, I think the huge edge of it has gone for me. It sort of starts to melt and, you know, come together. And, you know, it's like, I'm all of this. I'm a perfectionist. I'm the good girl and I'm all of it. We are all of these selves. And I think it's just been really liberating for me to embrace more of me. And as I do, then I can show up more and be more. And so it's such a rich, beautiful topic. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Yes. Yes to all of it. And, you know, I agree. I have not been my perfectionist. I don't think it's meant to go away, right? Like that's not the point. Same with befriend your fear, right? The point here is not to eradicate. The point is to be in a more optimal relationship with. The point is also for it not to be all of us, right? Like when we're in these archetypes or these parts, we think it's all of us, or these fears, we think it's all of us. That's when they have really the most power. But when we can separate our higher wisdom or, so, you know, whatever we want to call it, that's when we can work better with it. But for better or worse, I don't know that they go away. You know, I've worked on my perfectionist self and continue to. I had something come up this weekend that triggered my perfectionist. And all of a sudden I noticed I was going back into like, are the curriculums okay? Do I need to do, you know, like all the things, but different than 10 years ago, I didn't harp on that for too long. Like, it happened, it got activated. And I was like, oh, wait, this is what's going on here, right? And then I could move from there. All right, so let's keep on going. So I wanted to just make this point too, that a subset of perfectionism is expecting growth, transformation, or any kind of accomplishment to be neat, not messy at all, totally linear and happen right away, instead of expecting growth, transformation to be messy and cyclical. I'll leave it at that.
Can you say that one more time?
Yeah.
Thank you.
A subset of perfectionism is expecting growth, transformation, or any kind of accomplishment to be neat, linear, and happen right away, instead of knowing that growth, transformation, and much accomplishment is actually messy and cyclical. So you can just note if that's something that is alive inside of you. So here's the thing about perfectionism, and this is why I call it a myth. Human beings cannot achieve perfection in anything. Human beings cannot achieve perfection. It's not for us. It is only for the gods, if you will. Literally, maybe a little bit of a god complex going on. when we expect ourselves to be perfectionist. So it's a myth. And I'm gonna just take it a step further just for you to think about. We won't get too much into this. And you can try this on. Perfection is a patriarchal myth. Perfection is a patriarchal myth. Think about who has set our cultural standards of perfection and how those standards uphold power, keep the people in power. In power. All we have to do, just to take one example, is to look at female ideals of beauty. When we get stuck in the myth of perfection, we're actually engaged in black or white thinking. When we get stuck in the myth of perfection, we're actually engaged in black and white thinking. When we're in the myth of perfection, there's only two things, perfection or failure. Those are the only two realities available to options available to us when we're in the myth of perfection. We are either perfect, or we suck, like it, right? And then what happens is we often ping pong back and forth between the two. And what I mean by that is I need to be perfect. I need to be perfect. I need to be perfect. Of course, we never meet that ideal because human beings can't be perfect. And then we get slammed, the ping pong slams us to, well, then I suck. Well, then I suck. Well, then I suck. And then maybe we work up enough to be like, okay, I'm going to be perfect. I'm going to be perfect. I'm going to be perfect. And then we don't achieve that. And so we ping pong back. And when we engage in that binary thinking, when we're in that ping pong game between just the only options are perfection or failure, what happens is we miss out on what's in between perfection and failure, which is actually all of where real life is. That is the gold. When I say in the middle of perfection and failure, I don't mean mediocre, and I want to be clear about that. This is where the gold is. This is where reality is. This is where being a human is. Not only is there no such thing as total perfection, there's also no such thing as utter failure. So, where in your life or your work are you engaging in binary thinking? For example, I'm either rich or I'm poor. I'm either completely beautiful or I'm disgusting looking. I'm a success or I'm a failure. I have spaciousness or I have no time at all. I'm really, really healthy or else I'm incredibly sick. I'm an amazing practitioner, best ever or worst ever. Where are you engaging in binary? Maybe for some of us, it would take a very long time to list all the things, but I'll give you about a half minute to explore on that. Always learning versus accomplished. Yes, I have clients. I don't have any clients. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, let's pause here. What wants to be said or teased out more around this idea of the myth, the ping pong game, the binary thinking? Feels important. Anika.
As you said that, I realized all the aspects of where I'm engaged in binary thinking, they're all related to they're all in the creation aspect, my creativity. Like sex, cooking, writing, it's mm-hmm. all linked to that creative energy. And well, that's where I'm at. And so,
yeah. Why is that an important awareness? What's that showing you?
What's coming through is that's where we were told what was right and what was not right, what was allowed, what was not allowed. So in my head, and you know, where it gets imprinted on us as children, we think automatically black or white, and undoing that and exploring deeper into all the nuances. Because I get that in other aspects of my life where I've worked through, but when it comes to that, the creative aspect, the root, I'm stuck.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So they're kind of all that's where the expectations have been. Good. Anything else that wants to be said about the myth, the ping pong game, the binary thinking before we move on? Okay. All right, so this has all been kind of by way of background. So how can we work with our clients when they are under the spell of the myth of perfection? What are some things that we can do? Well, there are a number of different ways we can work with this. So let's take a look. First, just kind of to say, by way of background, the best way as practitioners that we can support our clients with their perfectionism, with the myth of perfection, is first back to energetics, right? So being aware of our own perfectionism filters. Where are the places where we have unchecked ideas of perfection? And are we bringing that into the container, the client container with us? Is it about what, you know, a perfect relationship looks like if you're working with relationships, perfect business, a perfect program, you know, whatever it is, the way something should happen, the way the work plan should roll out, right? So really just remember to check your filters. And then the other piece around energetics that I think, I should say, like, I at the outset, I knew was important, but I've seen over the years how powerful this one little thing is for clients, is for you as the practitioner to let your clients know that you are imperfect, that you know that you're imperfect, and that you are okay, or in the process of being okay with your imperfection. I cannot underestimate enough this point around energy follows energy with perfection. For anybody that, you know, follows the greater, whatever's happening in social media, the transformational industry, but we can see this in any industry, really. There are so many leaders, you know, out there, whether it's a visible leader, like consider a practitioner, a leader, whatever it is, leader of a team that need to be perfect, right? Because of their own defenses, they need to show up as perfect. They need to think they're perfect. They need for people to think they're perfect. They only reveal their perfect lives on social media or this and that. It does so much damage and reinforces the myth. I let my clients know all the time that I'm imperfect. If I mess up, I say it as much as I can, right? It's so, so important. On a very elementary level, I do this with my children very intentionally. Oops, mommy made a mistake. Right? Just like little things like that are so important, not just for children, but for adults in terms of messaging. Okay. So those are kind of just the background energetics. Of course, just simple creating awareness around the perfectionism can be very, very powerful. Right. So we've already looked at so many tools for creating awareness. Use your reflecting tools, right? So for example, talking to a client about a certain situation, you note that they're really under the energy of the perfectionism. You can simply say, my sense is that your perfectionist is showing up a bit right now. How does that land for you? Or I notice that sometimes when you feel under pressure, your perfectionist tends to, right, XYZ, whatever it is. Sometimes even consulting, right? Consulting is one of the tools of creating awareness. My sense is that what you're trying to achieve is an unrealistic expectation. It's putting too much pressure on yourself. So really using those creating awareness skills. Questioning to create awareness. Here are some examples. When you are strategizing, maybe on a new idea, a new project, a way a meeting is going to happen, you whatever with a client, what would perfectionism be here versus what would be realistic and acceptable here? To create awareness so that they're not in that perfectionist thinking. Another exercise that can really help with that is to ask your client to make, you can do this with two columns or you can do this with three columns. Column one is truly good enough. Column two, if you're gonna do three columns, column two can be, well, what would be ideal? And then column three is what would be perfect and unrealistic. Put those two together. What would be perfect and unrealistic, right? So for example, let's say the topic is your client work. Maybe truly good enough is your clients feel seen and heard and loved by you. Truly good enough might be they're learning how to access their own inner wisdom in the process with you. They're moving forward on goals. Maybe that's truly good enough. Then maybe like truly good enough plus or ideal is a lot of your sessions, you're knocking it out of the park. There's deep learning and evolution that's being created and harnessed as clients experience their resistances, right? The inevitable resistance. And then maybe perfect and unrealistic, a client might come up with every single session, they're knocking it out of the park, bringing the client to their knees. Their clients are moving forward without any resistance or getting stuck at all. There's consistent growth without any plateaus or setbacks, right? So a way to suss out what the perfectionist vision here is, that's unattainable, that's putting too much pressure, that's going to cause a lot of harm in a sense, in terms of self-criticism versus what's more realistic. Sometimes asking questions, just asking clients, how hard are you being on yourself here? In what ways are you being hard on yourself here? Or asking questions about the binary thinking. You may have to explain, you do a little teaching first for a minute or two. What's the binary thinking that you're applying to this situation? Or who or what systems or culture standards does this reflect? Whose standards does this reflect? So creating awareness, lots of different ways to create awareness. As you work with a client on the myth of perfection, you may also want to work with the perfectionist as an archetype, or work with the perfectionist as a fear, or work with some of the negative thought patterns that come from the perfectionist. So, for example, you could do a befriend your fear process, so you could either do it with the fear of not being perfect itself, or you could also do a befriend your fear process where it's a dialogue with the perfectionist. You can do it the way we have been looking at befriend your fear, in terms of it being a somatic process, dialogue where they find where the perfectionist is in their body, and you really use the process for them to befriend their perfectionist, to bring that perfectionist out of the blind spot, so that they can really see the perfectionist for what it is, and not that it's all of themselves, but a part of themselves, to help them create more spaciousness between their higher wisdom and that perfectionist, that energy of the perfectionist. So you can do that through that somatic experience. They can do it through journaling with the perfectionist or the fear of the perfectionist. If you remember back to our rewiring negative thought patterns class, I also offered a visualization where it wasn't, where the part or the thought wasn't inside the body, but you call it down in human form to see it outside of the body. You could do that with the perfectionist or the fear of the perfectionist, or even the thought of, you know, whatever you'd support the client to find the limiting thought. But, you know, like if I'm not perfect, then I'll die, right? And then have that dialogue with that. I'll provide this week, a guided visualization on the last one there, just so that you have it for yourself. But of course, always when you're working one-on-one, always coach the what based on the who. Don't stick to the script. So I'm just looking at the chat. Yeah, we're in Virgo season, so perfect timing for perfection. Jennifer's saying you just realized that how your parents expected you to be perfect by never admitting that they make mistakes. It's my biggest thing as a parent. Now that I have a teenager, it's work to do that. Sonia's asking, do perfectionism and catastrophizing always or often come together? It's such a good question. I think you're spot on. I don't know that it always does, but because there's this extreme binary thinking, and if you have the tendency to catastrophize, then if you're not in the perfection, you're gonna be in the utter failure. And that's certainly the catastrophizing. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Someone just started. You know what? I'm going to move. Give me 1 second. There's a loud noise right outside my window. Don't know how long. Oh. I'm moving away. No, let me just move. Get a little vision of my house, which is a little dirty. Sorry, I'm imperfect. Okay. All right, let me pause. There's other pieces for us to look at, but I know I just shared a mouthful. Any thoughts, any questions in terms of energetics, in terms of different ways to create awareness? And the creating awareness is the first step of the befriending. Don't underestimate just conversation, creating awareness, that can go a long way. And we can also use some of the different tools that we've been learning. Any questions or further thoughts on that? Okay.
Yeah, I have one, Joanna.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
So, you know, being by birthright a member of the patriarchy, I've thought long and hard about this. And one of the reasons why I've invested so much time in gifts is the only device I know of that works directly against both patriarchy and cash economies and industrialized economies. And it does that because gifts don't have anything to do with binary thinking. So if Sonia and Naomi and Rachel and I are all coaches, if we believe in the idea of gifts, then each of us believe as a coach that the other three can do something that I can't do, no matter how hard I try. They bring a unique capacity to coaching that I can't do. And so it gets rid of the idea of Sonia's a better coach than me, and it replaces it with Sonia is a unique coach. And as soon as we accept cash economies and patriarchy, we're immediately in the competition business and gifts no longer matter. It's just, am I ahead or am I behind? And so when we lost gifts, the idea of gifts, or changed the word gift to, you know, better than somebody else at something being gifted, we really lost. We accepted the idea of competition as the way that we're going to relate to each other.
Yeah, I love that. And the way that you're just describing it, one of the things that comes up for me is that it helps eliminate hierarchical thinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It does.
And when we can move, which is part of the perfectionism and in the culture, and when we can move out of the hierarchical thinking, then there's so much more freedom and spaciousness to be who we are and to be in a right relationship with who other people are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, it has me thinking if gifts are the only way, or if there are other ways too. But
well, I'm just saying it's the dominant cultural thing that we've lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. All right, now the noise has moved back here. I'm so sorry.
just gonna move back.
Okay, let's keep on going. A couple of other ways to think about perfectionism when you're working with clients, or ways to work. We spoke a little bit about, it was brought up a couple times too, kind of this, I call it the shadow of perfectionism. So just very fast crash course on Jungian shadow. Oftentimes what's happening in shadow is that there is two extremes. It's actually similar to the black and white thinking. There's two extremes. There's a hypo expression of an energy going on and a hypo expression of an energy going on. If we see perfection or perfectionism as hyper, right? Like on steroids, like have to get it right, have to get it right, have to get it right. Sometimes there can be a reaction to an internal reaction to that, where we get bumped to a hypo version of it. Maybe that hypo version it's the other extreme. It might be the sloth. It might be the extreme lazy one. It might be the sloppy one. It might be the one that always makes mistakes, right? Not, of course, we all make mistakes, right? But like always making mistakes. So sometimes it can be helpful. We may not see the perfectionist in the client, because the expression of this myth isn't coming out through like what we think of typically as the perfectionist, crossing every T, dotting every I, sticking with the details. It's never good enough. It's never good enough. The expression of the myth of perfection might be coming out and being expressed as the sloth, as the lazy one, as the slacker, as the sloppy one. So that's another entree in to working with this dynamic, another part of themselves. So you may want to create awareness around what that archetype, you know, just even create awareness around that part or that archetype to begin with, and then support them to see what it's safeguarding. You may want to befriend that part, do somatic visualization with that part, hear from the voice of that part, or bring those two together, similar to that good girl and that rebel, right? So what happens when the perfectionist and the sloth start to dialogue with each other? I know that was all very fast, like that was a lot in a short period, but let me pause there. Any thoughts on that or questions on that? Rose.
This is really great. I never thought of the shadow of perfectionism. And I have, you know, I have some sloth energy, and I really haven't embraced it in terms of being the shadow of perfectionism. I didn't. And some of my clients do. This is super helpful, because it almost disguises the perfectionism, or it's like, I guess it's some sense of, if you can't be a perfectionist, then I guess go to the other extreme and do this. But yeah, it's a whole other way to look at it. So, I mean, it's just opened a door. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I mean, so much to say on this, but the other piece I'll say about shadow is that it's often out of, when we're in a shadow expression, it's often out of our control, and then we don't like it, right? So if we're going into the sloth or the sloppy one, generally people that are in the sloth or the sloppy one, they resent it, they hate it, they think it's a liability. The more that we can bring awareness to it, and then remember, love all parts. There is a purpose to every part. Support the client to embrace that shadow, to create a different relationship. Then they can leverage, for example, the sloth when they need it, right? Because if we're, hopefully they're not going to continue to go to perfection, but if we're high achievers and we're looking and, you know, we're even going for that ideal, we actually maybe need our sloth sometimes. But if we've rejected it, if we've decided that it's bad, it's just going to come up at the worst moment to sabotage us, like the day before the paper is due or, you know, something like that. That makes sense.
So can I ask, because I have a client who is definitely a perfectionist and she is obsessed with her life as a sloth these days because she's retired and nothing makes sense anymore. And I get a lot of what she's going through. But so the idea, though, is embracing, I don't know if I'd call her the sloth to her face unless you, but because that would
take yeah, you'd want your client to come up with the label themselves.
Yeah, that's not what she would call herself, but she has such disgust for herself that it's keeping her from learning from it. So we're just baby stepping our way into embracing, but it is a reaction to the perfectionism. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, so you can look at it through that lens as the reaction, but when you look at it through that lens, don't make it wrong. Don't make the sloth wrong. Don't make the lazy one wrong. Always bring love and compassion and acceptance and a striving to find what's the higher purpose of this energy, of this archetype, of this part. When you can do that, similar to what we were talking about with fears, then your higher self gets to harness that part, gets to use it as a superpower when and in the right situations where it's needed versus the sloth harnessing your client and being in control.
So for example, if you have an awareness about it, the sloth could be a time for deep rest if there's been, you know, a huge outpouring of energy in a career. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Great example. All right. That was kind of crash course shadow. So a lot more there, but I know you're all advanced, so you can take it, but just want to see if there's still one more tool, one of my most favorites I want to get to, but just see if there are any other questions on that for now. Okay. All right, so we've looked at this a little bit already. It's come up in one of our classes. One of my favorite, all of these are my favorite tools, but another tool for myth of perfection is the even though nevertheless. So this little exercise is a great way to support a client or yourself to move out of binary thinking. And also to move into growth mindset. You know, one of the antidotes to being stuck in the myth of perfection is to bring a growth mindset to the situation, right? The road to success is always under construction. Such and such hasn't happened yet, right? I'm learning this and this and that, that is getting me closer to the ideal, you know, all of that. So even though nevertheless is, you know, essentially you're working on a client who's really, they're just, because it hasn't been amazing, they think it's an utter failure and it's never going to get better. And, you know, like, right, that ping pong thing. And so you ask them to complete the even though nevertheless statement a number of times. Once is usually not enough. So for example, well, it can take a parenting issue that I have right now, where me and my teenager, we butt heads a lot. There's a lot of fighting. And because of that, I go to this place of like, I'm a failure as a parent. We're never going to have a great relationship. I've ruined her for good. So by total binary thinking and some of that catastrophic thinking that Sonia was talking about. So with even though nevertheless, here's some of my even though neverthelesses. Even though Penina and I butt heads a lot, nevertheless, she shares and opens up with me a lot. She calls on me when she's in need. Even though Penina and I butt heads a lot, nevertheless, she's slowly learning that there have to be some rules in this house and that they're there to keep her safe. Even though Penina and I butt heads a lot, nevertheless, she's a strong and confident young woman, and she's certainly not afraid to speak her mind. Right, so do you see what that does? It takes it out of the perfection, or that even though says, okay, yeah, it's not perfect, right? Like even though blah, 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 even though I didn't fill that program, even though Penina and I fight a lot, even though that wasn't a total home run, right? So it acknowledges that I want the perfection, but that's not ever gonna happen. And then the nevertheless brings it out of the utter failure. It brings it into that real life gold place, out of the binary thinking, and into some hope and positivity and motivation to keep on going. It honors the truth of what is, right? Like I am in pain that we fight a lot. It does concern me, but it also doesn't catastrophize the situation or make it a total failure. It honors what is. So I use this exercise personally all the time. It is really helpful. And like I said, one isn't enough. I like to do at least 5, 10. And if I can do it a couple days in a row, even better. And so what I want to offer all of us here, you know, and only if it feels useful to you, is as a group for the next 5 days, we'll do this in the Facebook group. We'll have 5 days of even though nevertheless. So, and I'll do it with you. Pick a topic that you want to work on over the next 5 days. And each day in your own time, I'll send you reminders and prompts in the Facebook group. Do at least 5 to 10 even though neverthelesses, and notice. Right. And you do it once and it's not like then it's fixed forever, right? With all of this stuff, but it brings you back to that balanced place so that you can maybe get through your day or maybe just get through the next hour, take action that you need to take, right? And work it that way. So, and if the even though nevertheless doesn't float your boat, but you still want to do some 5 days of working on myth of perfection, my other offering for you is to do 5 days of dialoguing with your perfectionist, and inviting it to share its highest wisdom with you. You can do both too, but don't be perfection, right? And don't be perfectionist about it. If you miss a day, it's totally fine. But one of the reasons I'm offering this to you, number one, just to practice for yourself, but number two, back to this idea of the difference between the breakthrough and the transformation, I want to just give you a little bit of a tighter container for a little bit to experience working persistently. become something. It's good for ourselves, and then we can support our clients with it. And then, of course, you can mix and match all of the different tools that we looked at today. So if you have a client and you sense that myth of perfection is at play, you know, for example, first you can create awareness around the unrealistic perfectionism that they're operating under. Then from there, maybe you can do a befriend your fear process about maybe around the fear of not being perfect. And then from there, strategize, come up with an action step or goal for them to take next. Or maybe step one is create awareness around their binary thinking on the topic. I like to, you know, sometimes a lot of what I share with you around human behavior, I don't necessarily share with my clients when we're coaching, but the ping pong game one is one that like people latch on to right away, like they really get it. So maybe you share about the ping pong game, or maybe you create awareness around the binary thinking that they're using on a particular topic. And then maybe from there, you look at the shadow archetype that they go into when they're in their binary thinking, and you do some work with that. And then maybe you top it off with a round of even though nevertheless, right? So you can mix and match depending on the situation, the time that you have, et cetera. So for homework, you'll get resource sheets. We'll do our challenge. There'll be homework in the resource sheets as well. And if you're working with a coaching partner, I want to invite you to bring, you know, as much as you can in a session without, what's the word, like making it happen if the perfectionism isn't there, but try to look through an obstacle through this lens of myth of perfection and use any of the tools that are appropriate. Try some of these out. All right, we have a couple of minutes left. I'd love to hear last thoughts, what you're taking from our call today, or any questions that you have. Julia.
This isn't an either or. And every part has its place. It's not a competition. And I don't have to create the drama or the chaos to feel as though I'm moving towards something. Yeah, there's a bit of confusion there. But it doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to be hard.
Where do you feel that in your body, that knowing?
It's all in my head. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my body's blank.
Is that okay?
It is.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, maybe it's in your head is where, right? Like a lot of this is about thinking, right? Negative thought patterns. So beautiful.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, Sonia, I quickly caught your comment as well. I can only use it for bad right now. Do you want to share about that?
I think this is not very easy to do. I think I'm a little bit triggered right now and thinking, So I try to use this in this hot way of being right now. And I'm thinking, well, even though I think I'm a little shit who doesn't know anything, I nevertheless get into a situation where I'm being a smart ass or present myself as knowing better.
I think you stepped right into your extreme, like, perfectionist. Right? That's not your highest was that even though nevertheless isn't coming from you, that's coming from that energy. Are you willing? I know we're at time, so of course, if anyone needs to leave, if you do too, Sonia, but do you have a few moments, Sonia? Are you willing to go a little deeper? So if that, the one that wrote that, if that's a part of you, what would you call that part?
Little Sonia, the one that wasn't supposed to be there.
The one that what?
Wasn't supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean, the one that wasn't supposed to be there?
I realized that the not good enough, or the not the supposed to be seen, but not
supposed to be heard, was translated in me to not supposed to be there, doesn't belong.
Okay, so let's not call that little Sonia, because that's a lot to put like on all of little Sonia.
Okay.
Tell me if this feels right. Can we call that one the one that feels like she's not supposed to be there?
Okay.
Or is there a better?
No, that's good.
Okay. So the one that feels like she's not supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
From your highest self, Sonia? Or well, let me ask you this first. Where inside your body does that one live right now? Where are you experiencing that one in your body? The one who feels she shouldn't be there.
Right in my solar plexus.
Mm, okay. Okay, good. You're doing really well. Is it okay to stick with it for a little bit? From your highest self, from your true self, from your wise self, as you observe that one in your solar plexus, how do you feel about that one from your highest self?
I feel a lot of grief that, and a lot of sadness that she's feeling that way.
Yeah. Is it okay to be with that for a moment? Just let that move through you. That's coming from your highest self. How else does your highest self feel about that one?
It just thinks that it's not true.
Yeah.
That it's never true for nobody.
Would it be okay if you told that one this? That one, my sense is that one really needs to hear this. Yeah. What are you noticing in your body as you share that?
She's calming down. I'd like there's a softening. The contraction is gone.
Yeah. Good.
I don't cry in public, by the way.
Thank you for trusting us. It's an honor to witness and beautiful. So from this place, let's try. What would one even though nevertheless be?
Dang. even though you feel like you're not supposed to be here, I feel stupid. You belong anyway. I see I'm not there yet. But no, I am. On my way. Yeah, reframing is always hard for me.
Why is that stupid, what you just said?
I guess it feels placating a little bit, but
I'm wondering if the beginning, this may or may not be helpful. I'm actually wondering if the beginning is a little bit different. I'm wondering if the beginning was, even though you weren't seen and heard, nevertheless. Or whatever the ideal of perfection that you're going for. Like, what is that ideal of perfection that you keep on beating yourself up for?
Shut the fuck up. Do not say anything. So even though I wasn't supposed to be seen and heard, it's okay to use my, nevertheless, I should be using my voice, or it's okay to use my voice, or it's okay to be seen.
I think all of those. And I would encourage you also to find the places, like some of the after the nevertheless. Nevertheless, when I had that session with that client and I spoke, it really impacted her. Nevertheless, when I allowed myself to be seen with my friend the other day, we had a beautiful connection. What's coming through for you right now?
I guess using evidence like that moves it from placating to real soothing and changing. And there's just a release happening right now, I suppose.
Yeah. Because this piece of homework feels really important for you in particular with those evidence pieces, right? And little ones count as much as big ones.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And thank you. Thank you so much. All right, everybody. I am sending so much love and just so much gratitude for all of you. Thank you for your presence today. Thank you for all of who you are in your imperfect messiness. Thank you for granting me the opportunity to be imperfect with you as well. We'll start our challenge tomorrow. If you have any questions, let me know. Lots of love.